absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show 148 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. So, what have we got for you today? Well, it's mainly about language, and it's mainly centred on the US. You may remember that I talked to Tommy and Louis Michaud, father and son, about their Cajun music earlier in the year. Cajun refers to the French-speaking area of the US in Louisiana. And as well as talking about their music, we talked quite a bit about the role of the French language. So we'll be hearing from Louis about what speaking French said about you as a person.
People down here were told for so long that French in general was lower class, just because it was the Americanization. It was made illegal to speak French in school for a while in the earlier 1900s, and people associated speaking French with being very poor and very lower class, even though French was spoken in all walks of life, but it became profitable to speak English. And so it became a very, very negative stigma was put on.
And we'll hear from Tommy about the decisions that his grandparents made about the languages their children should speak.
So both of my dad's parents were educators, they were teachers, and I guess they wholly embraced this philosophy, and they didn't teach any of their kids to speak French, but they would speak French to each other. We'd go to my grandparents' house, and whenever they'd speak to each other, they'd speak to each other in French. We figured it was because they didn't want us to know what they were saying. But then they'd always speak English to us, and then later we learned French in school, and we would try to speak it with them, and they'd always answer us in English. You know, we'd speak French too. I mean, that's typical.
We'll also be heading to North Carolina, where we'll be hearing from Dr. Desiré Beloubi about why he believes that American students should consider learning an African language. The way in which Dr. Beloubi introduced himself suggests that there is a need for some basic geographical knowledge at least.
So let me go ahead and introduce myself as Desiré Beloubi. I'm originally from Benin, B-E-N-I-N. People confuse it with Belize, but it's Benin on the west coast of Africa. And I've been in the United States since 1995.
You'll be able to find links to all the people we meet in the show on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can also leave us a comment. Thanks to Matthew Hill, for example, for dropping by, and to Sammy from Poland, who asked Matthew a question. So we'll start with Louis Michaud, one of the prime movers behind the Cajun punk band, the Lost Bayou Ramblers. In show 144, we heard about their music and what it meant to the band members, as well as its cultural roots. Another topic that we talked a great deal about was the status of the French language in Louisiana. I made a trip to Louisiana many years ago, and I have to say that the language wasn't really evident. But when I talked to Louis, I discovered that this was because it was mostly hidden. So the question is, why would anyone in Louisiana want to hide the fact that they can speak French? And do people in Louisiana still learn French? Is it absolutely francophone?
You're writing in French, and is that something you learned in school, or did you learn it some other way?
Yeah, I learned many ways. I did learn partly in school. Like, I didn't learn much in, you know, say, grade school. I took one French in high school, and the only thing I learned were a couple nasty words. And then when I went into college, I did one semester of college and took French. A guy from Nova Scotia came in, and he talked to our French class and said, yeah, we've got this immersion school up in Nova Scotia called University of de Sainte Anne. And it's in Church Point, Nova Scotia, which we have a Church Point, Louisiana, which was named after Church Point, Nova Scotia, being that that's where our Cajun ancestors came from, Acadie. And so he said, y'all can come up for 5 weeks and learn French. I said, that sounds like a great idea. So I started learning a little French on my own, like Cajun French with family and neighbors and such. And so this was a really good way for me to go and for one, have a historical lesson of my own people, and for two, to really just, you know, drive the French in, because, I mean, it's something that growing up, you heard it all the time, and as much as you could kind of make out everything and you know what it's supposed to sound like, you still didn't know what it meant. So we had a huge advantage just hearing it all the time, but, you know, had to get past that point. So I actually went to Nova Scotia and did that five-week immersion program, which a lot of people of my generation here in South Louisiana have done. I mean, hundreds by now. And that program alone has been huge for our generation of Francophones. But so after that school, I went out on hitchhiking to French Canada for about 3 months, learning fiddle and learning French at the same time. And then I came down, you know, I just continued to learn with my family. And, you know, with the music, and the music helped me really a lot to learn the French because, you know, through learning the songs, you learn so many expressions, you learn just so many ways of saying things and that are much, you know, that are really local and that are, you know, and you learn a lot of history and knowledge that I never would have known before had I not spoken French. So the music is definitely one of the biggest preservers of French here in South Louisiana, and, you know, definitely for myself included.
Can I just ask you, is French spoken on an everyday basis in some parts of Louisiana or not?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where, you know, even myself, at some point you think, well, it's really not anywhere. It seems like it's not around. But, you know, at that moment, I guarantee you there's someone in the room who, if you started breaking out in French, would respond to you no problem. Well, I live in Arneville. You know, basically anyone over 40 years old speaks French still from, even if it's not their first language, they had to talk to their grandparents and such. And it's where I happen to live is very, you know, I'm from Lafayette, but I moved 20 minutes to the north up in near Arneville. And it's amazing how many people speak French up here. I go to the grocery store and people that I've been seeing for a couple years at the grocery store, I didn't even realize, but they all speak French, you know, and it's very, still very common and spoken every single day in most local establishments, you know, more in the country just because Lafayette is much more mixed Cajun, Creole, and a lot of Americans for the oil business and such, and it's a growing city. But especially in the country, you know, where the population is more stagnant, there is a lot of French still spoken. There's still French radio programs and a lot more French than one would think even visiting, you know, even a French person visiting tries to get things in French. And some people are just shy and don't want to respond because they don't want to be told that their French isn't good, which is kind of, you know, the history.
Oh, yeah, of course. So I shouldn't ask whether I would understand it.
People down here were told for so long that French in general was lower class just because it was the Americanization. It was made illegal to speak French in school for a while in the earlier 1900s, and people associated speaking French with being very poor and very lower class, even though French was spoken in all walks of life, but it became profitable to speak English, and so it became a very, very negative stigma. But it's a very comprehensible French, I mean, I would say, you know, I think, there are a lot of different words a Parisian wouldn't understand, or even a country Frenchman wouldn't understand. But that said, like, a lot of people in the country in France recognize the way we speak as the way their grandparents spoke. You know, old words such as piastre for dollar and austère for right now instead of maintenant. Just a lot of different words that we use that are only used in the very old generations in France.
So there's a lot of sensitive history behind the survival of the French language in that part of the United States. Then a few weeks ago, my eyes and ears in Florida, Coule au Dutoula, alerted me to a communique sent out by the Southeast African Languages and Literatures Forum on October the 2nd. It read, "We, the members of Southeast African Languages and Literatures Forum, at the second annual conference of the Forum held at the Chapel Hill campus of the University of North Carolina, acknowledge that in view of the internationalization of the curriculum at many American colleges and universities, that there is the need to increase the number of American undergraduate and graduate students engaged in the study of critical languages of Africa. In the wake of the 9/11 attacks, many US universities beefed up their foreign language requirements in recognition of the fact that to understand another culture, it helps greatly if you know a bit of the language. So here was a communique suggesting that the foreign language requirement should more often lead to the learning of an African language, such as Yoruba. But why? To find out more, I spoke to Dr. Desiree Balubi of Shaw University in North Carolina, the chair of the forum behind the communique. And during the course of our conversation, I also learned a new acronym, HBCU, which stands for Historically Black Colleges and Universities. So why does an English teacher start a campaign to promote the learning of African languages? I wanted to be absolutely informed.
Yoruba is one of the most popular languages in West Africa, mainly in Nigeria, and it cut across borders from Nigeria through Benin, Togo, and Ghana. So actually being a linguist, yes, I'm deeply involved in the learning and the teaching and the cultures of African languages.
I imagine, from my perspective in Europe, that maybe Spanish or French might be first on the list of American students. So how do you argue for supporting the learning of African languages?
Yeah, as you know, the world is shrinking, it's becoming a global village. And the paradigm shift actually started in the aftermath of 9/11 in the United States. So the least commonly taught languages are emerging, are becoming more and more important. Arabic, Swahili, languages spoken in any corner of the world. So we're not excluding any language, as you know. The European languages have dominated the market, as it were, but the African languages as well as the Asian languages are also emerging, are becoming part of the equation. Because if we restrict the teaching and learning of languages just to the European languages, we wouldn't satisfy the needs of this global village. We must include non-Indo-European languages as well.
So has this also something to do with the increasing dynamism of business in Africa?
African countries have not realized how important the teaching and learning of their languages have become in the United States or overseas. So I would say it's more, I call it a paradox because if America or American colleges and universities are more interested in teaching and learning African languages, and the African countries are not that much involved in the promotion of their languages, I believe it's a paradox. So those of us who originated from the continent, we're actually taking the news back to them and saying, hey, your languages and cultures are part of the equation. If you want to be part of this global market, we need to promote these languages because they do contribute a lot.
I'm wondering, how do you market in the American universities? How do you market the African languages?
So understanding the culture, understanding the language is a plus because it will help us get out of the game of overgeneralizing and claiming that all Arabs are terrorists, for example. So it will get us out of the mode of stereotyping and interpreting a world or societal phenomena only through our own culture lenses. So the Americans will see the world only from their American perspective. But if we should see the global village, I always compare it to an elephant. It takes some people to creep underneath to see under the elephant. It takes some people to use the helicopter to see the top of the elephant. So this village is our village. We must look at it from all angles. So we tell them it is important that they know more about Africa. And I have the privilege of serving in HBCU, which is a historically black college and university. So if we have in our cultures this proverb that says, if you don't know where you're going, at least you should not forget where you came from. So the history of the HBCU, the history of America, I mean, as a matter of fact, as I always claim, it's not going to be complete until we know something about the history of Africa and vice versa. Africa, Europe, and America, we are interconnected.
It also interests me how enthusiastic the students are to do this or whether they see it as a necessary evil.
I think they are really excited because they want to try something that is new. They want to get out of the, you know, the same old thing that we, you know, they've been doing. And it gives them an opportunity to get outside of the United States and explore something that doesn't quite look like America. You know, going to Spain, going to Europe, they still see, you know, more or less the same faces. But when they go to Africa, for them, it's a completely different world.
The issue of language just doesn't go away. And after finding out how and why Louis Michaud learned French, I spoke to his father, Tommy Michaud, to find out more about these attitudes to the French language in the recent past, and discovered that at one point it was absolutely illegal. But we'll start by hearing as Tommy Michaud sings in French with his band Les Frères Michaud.
Parents too. I mean, I guess that'll set the stage for it. I mean, my mom and dad, neither one of them really were or are fluent in French, but they all know some French. They both know some French, but like three of my four grandparents all grew up speaking French before they learned English and only learned English later when they went to school. But the fourth one was from North Louisiana. He was more Anglo, and Smith was his last name. And, So he was Anglo, but he came down to South Louisiana to manage a farm, and that's where he met my grandmother. And, but she grew up speaking French on Bayou Teche, and then my dad's, both of his parents grew up in Avoyelles Parish speaking French, and all their siblings spoke French, and they, you know, they were educated in French until they, a certain time in school, I mean, in the early part of the 20th century. And then there was a huge shift in the, I guess, the culture and the whole way of thinking, the philosophy of the people down here. You know, people started feeling handicapped for being French, and it was kind of a stigma, and, you know, people felt kind of ashamed, like they were looked down upon because they didn't speak English. So, you know, everybody kind of got together, either formally or informally, I don't know, but at some point, everybody, all the grown-ups kind of agreed that, hey, if we want our kids to succeed in this world, they got to speak English and they got to speak it well. So if they're going to speak English, we can't let them speak French, because, you know, just the whole idea of being bilingual, I don't know, maybe never really was introduced into the, I don't know, you know, how many discussions they had or whatever, but they, like Zachary Richard said, it made a conscious decision to not speak French and not teach the kids French and to raise them speaking English as much as possible. So they actually passed a law where they couldn't speak French on the school grounds, and the kids would get punished, and they'd have to write, you know, 20 times, I will not speak French on the school grounds, stuff like that. So my parents grew up in that environment. And so both of my dad's parents were educators. They were teachers. And I guess they wholly embraced this philosophy, and they didn't teach any of their kids to speak French, but they would speak French to each other. We'd go to my grandparents' house, excuse me, and they would whenever they speak to each other, they speak to each other in French. We figured it was because they didn't want us to know what they were saying. But then they'd always speak English to us. And then later we learned French in school and we would try to speak it with them and they'd always answer us in English. You know, we'd speak French too. I mean, that's typical of that generation all around town. It happened a lot as the young kids, you know, you'd try to speak French to the older people and then they'd always answer you in English just to kind of show, hey, we don't have to speak French. Look, I can speak English, you know, because they thought that was a good thing that they can speak English. And just the whole idea of, hey, nobody ever thought about, I guess, hey, we can be bilingual too. We can keep our language and, you know, have two languages.
And that's all I've got for you in this show. Thanks to all those who took part. And remember that if you've got a good idea for a show, then get in touch and we'll see if we can include it. We're always on the lookout for interesting people and ideas. Don't forget to take a look at our website if you want to follow up on some of the people or issues we've looked at in this show. You'll find all the links there at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And you're also welcome to leave us a comment about what you thought, a question, or a suggestion. Thanks for your support, which got us all the way to a European Podcast Award last year. The nominations are open for this year's competition, and as part of the PR around the award, I was interviewed about this podcast and what it meant to win the award. You'll find a link to that podcast also on our blog. Well, it's been a busy few weeks in which, amongst other things, I took part in the Managing Cultural Diversity Seminar held every year at the Rheinaar campus. And this year there are pictures, so you'll also find a link to the Facebook album of those on the blog. And as if that wasn't enough, my co-host Laurent Borgman is once again leaving for Australia for a few months. So in order to make things more manageable, we've decided to go monthly. So watch out for the next show, which will be coming to you from Down Under. Stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.